Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Right to the Source with Robin Harrison and Ed Burke. And we weren't with you last week because I was roaming around Paris and Ed was sitting in a sun lounger in Miami. So, Ed, how was Miami?
Miami was similar to Sao Paulo in the fact I left a sunny UK, got there for 2 days of rain where there was nothing to do but work in a hotel room, and then the sun came out when we were at the show.
Excellent.
But on a work basis, Miami was good. I must admit, the show wasn't quite as good as the Rio one. There weren't as many people there, which, given what's happening in Brazil, is probably understandable. But it was good to get some more insight on the Latin market.
Excellent. And so what did you pick up when you were there? Because obviously it was, I suppose it was kind of like an America's show. You know, it's combining the US, it's combining all the different kind of Latin American markets in Miami, which is, you know, a city that the Latam gaming community, you know, just from being at shows with them, they're absolutely love. So, I mean, what was kind of the chatter on the show floor?
So there wasn't loads about the US, at least that I was talking about. I think when people were talking about the US, it was about the predictions, markets and sweepstakes. I think that's the focus. You know, this traditional sports betting and iGaming market, I think everyone's got a handle of at the moment. There's not much optimism of new states opening up. I think there's a little bit of chat about whether hold margins are, you know, going to keep increasing, and whether actually these profit warnings, for want of a better word, from the big operators are actually due to poor sporting results, or whether actually last year they just had a few quarters of good results and actually the hold margin is going to be around 9% and not keep increasing. So yeah, it was really about what's going to happen to sweepstakes and prediction markets. And I think the sweepstakes, it looks like it's going to follow the same path of DFS. You know, some states will regulate, some states will outlaw it, and quite frankly, most states will probably just do nothing and they will continue to operate as they are. And for those operators who are doing the sweepstakes, it's a very lucrative market. In fact, I actually got an email the other day from someone that randomly came into my junk box offering to set me up. They could open a sweepstake business for me, you know, with very little regulation. I think it said, we can bypass all US regulations and you can be operating, you know, in the US within a week. You know, if that's coming to me, I'm sure it's going to a lot of people, and it seems, you know, quite a lucrative idea for them. And to be honest, I think that most states will probably do very little about it, a bit like DFS.
Wow. I mean, that's a bit of a grim state of affairs. You know, we've essentially had these, what, kind of 7 years now of this, you know, fairly kind of rapid growth and of gaming expansion. We had sports betting, kind of absolutely race across the states. And then essentially the casino wave didn't really follow it. And ultimately, I suppose, what, you know, it's something that we've definitely talked about a lot in, you know, IGP's other podcast, World Series of Politics. You know, essentially, you then have this grey market coming up, and without any tax revenue for the states, without any consumer protections, I mean, it just shows, you know, the kind of, I suppose, just the danger of regulatory stasis, because essentially you've got this kind of parallel market developing, which is, I mean, like, the numbers are difficult to see. I mean, like, I think on the prediction side, like, someone like Kalshi is probably doing the vast majority of money from sports now. But, I mean, why do you think this is? Do you think this is down to, that is really down just to this regulatory stasis, or is this more down to a lack of, you know, it's like, are there kind of deficiencies in the regulated operators' approaches? Because you mentioned earlier, you know, kind of like hold margins, and, you know, I suppose whether kind of like last year was an exceptional year for the most part until, well, I suppose until early Q3. I mean, is that really, you know, a case of things just snapping back?
I think we need to separate the predictions and the sweepstakes, albeit they both are semi-unregulated products. They'd argue that predictions aren't. They're being regulated by the SEC or, you know, whoever it is that's regulating them. Go and listen to the other podcast to get more data on, more details on regulation. I think the predictions market is, to speak to someone there, they view it as here to stay. And right, even in states where there is legal sports betting, their view is there are a lot of players who would rather do use Kalshi than they would use one of the, you know, FanDuel or DraftKings. And they said, actually, just for the younger demographic, the user experience is better. I will hold my hands up and say I've never been on it, so I can't sit here and compare and say whether that's true or not. But people in the US believe that that is a genuine contender to legal sports books in states where online sports betting is legal and regulated. And that's kind of there to stay. On the sweepstakes, you know, sweepstakes casino has been around for a long time. They just seem to now be be really growing. And I think that because there has been such a lack of momentum in iGaming regulation over the past few years, and to be honest, that doesn't seem to be changing very much. This kind of status quo or the kind of limbo that a lot of these states are in, they don't really want to regulate iCasino. But it is, then again, it is difficult for them to really get rid of the sweepstakes. I mean, there are certain states who can, but it was the same with sports betting. Most states kind of viewed sports betting as they didn't really want to touch it while PASPA was still in place. But how many states outlawed DFS? Very, very few. There were a handful who said we're going to regulate it and, try and tax it and make some money out of it. And actually, it'll be interesting to see whether a number of states start trying to legalize and tax sweepstakes, but still not have iCasino, because it's probably viewed as a softer form of iGaming and maybe a stepping stone. I mean, we could sit here in 5 years' time and say actually sweepstakes has been a very good thing for the US gambling industry because, it's that stepping stone towards regulation of iCasino. We may sit here in 5 years' time and there's still no other states having done iCasino, and sweepstake operators are making a lot of money without proper regulation and without any tax going to the states. Be an interesting one for to kind of get Brendan's view and see how they think it's going to go.
Well, I suppose the interesting thing is when you look at, that proliferation of DFS, among a very small number of brands, kind of like the market was very kind of controlled by the top two early on. When sports betting came in, that's a better product. That's a more kind of feature-rich product. So that, essentially superseded it. And you could argue that something like sweepstakes, even if they are bubbling under, that's something that they could, you could essentially, kind of like push down with a, well-regulated iCasino offering.
What's going to be the catalyst for states to kind of regulate iCasino? Obviously, the overturning of PASPA was what kind of the catalyst for people to regulate sports betting. I suppose if there's this realization of how much money is being made by these operators, or how much money is being spent by players, however you want to look at it, is that going to be a catalyst to say, look, let's tax this and get some money ourselves? I suppose on the flip side, as much as you can talk about how much tax a state can make, when you look at it in the kind of widest sense of it, it's still very little compared to a lot of the budget deficits that a lot of states are running. I mean, I remember just about probably during the financial crisis, 2009, we're talking about California, and like, of course, California is going to regulate, poker. This is a time when,
Yeah, I remember
that was kind of
that
happening.
AA coalition.
And it's like, well, look, this could fund this many schools or hospitals, but in the grand scheme of things, it didn't matter, and the tribes there just had no interest in it, as we've seen with nothing happening in California. So there's a lot of moving parts that could still block iGaming regulation in these states, including the land-based casinos who don't want it in a lot of the states. So actually, I think we'll probably, if I had to make a bet myself, a prediction, I would say that in 5 years' time, we're probably just going to end up in the same scenario we are. And there's a lot of people making money from that. Another bit, not wanting to get onto illegal stuff markets at the time, and I'm not saying that sweepstakes are illegal, but another chat with a few people there, the general view was, if I were to open an iCasino or iGaming sports book now, as a general rule, they're like, why would you go onshore in any of these markets? Especially in Latin America, we're talking about. The view was you would just do it offshore. So many people use it, so many people trust it, and the regulation is just not particularly friendly in most of these markets.
It's a dangerous precedent to set, though. I mean,
It
like,
is.
not wanting to once again kind of go back to this podcast's weird comfort blanket of the illegal markets, but there is definitely feels like there is kind of an underlying attitude in the industry that regulated markets are difficult, just go grey,
Yeah,
which
and look,
is a thing. It's dangerous for the future of the industry ultimately, because this sector, it started off very much an offshore industry and then it moved onshore. They created these big businesses, there was this kind of ongoing boom, these companies listed, did very well for a number of years, and now as things kind of turn, they've got a lot of shareholders to answer to. They're under huge pressure to find new ways to grow. And, for the most part, that has resulted in kind of like avoiding, kind of grey markets. And some companies that started out in kind of like grey jurisdictions have kind of pivoted to a legal market, either kind of post M&A, something like that. So it almost kind of creates this kind of, like these two parallel industries. You've got these two kind of different attitudes, kind of, like driving kind of like growth trajectories, but that's
Yeah, and look,
dangerous.
I am not advocating grey market or offshore non-locally licensed or illegal, however you want to call it, operators. And Chew's subscriber base is largely locally licensed operators. We have regulators, investors who clearly will be investing in listed companies, which are mostly locally licensed. So, for us, from a very selfish business point of view, we want the local licenses to thrive. We don't want this big offshore market, and we track the illegal market because we have to, and we actually try and find ways to, work with regulators to kind of, and the industry to explain how we can make it more attractive. But that is just the fact is that if you don't have shareholders from publicly listed companies, a lot of them view it as more business friendly to operate offshore, and there's not anything really being done to stop them. Or you have hybrids, big crypto casinos, for example, we don't name any, who are kind of making money in grey markets and then using that to fund their locally licensed markets. And then over time, they will probably become more locally licensed and get more revenues from the kind of white markets and then become worth a lot of money. So, it kind of funds their ventures. But, look, we want to be talking about LATAM, which we're now 13 minutes in and haven't really touched upon.
Well,
And,
no, you live with the US, so we went with the US and we
we,
run with it. But let's
you said the
pivot. Let
Americas. So we
yeah, the
start off Miami. So
Americas,
let's
yeah.
pivot.
Okay.
Mexico, very interesting market, but it is dominated by a handful of operators. I mean, it was dominated by one operator, Caliente. Now there are others coming up there. Caliente is still, in my estimate, four times the size of, number two, Bet365 and Codere, you've got there, Paduat. But it is a market that I don't think is particularly friendly to operators. I don't think it's bad, but it's not one that's, you can go, this is a
Utopia for
But
the
yeah,
industry.
and it's tough because you go in there and there is a tail of market share you can try and get, but these guys are big and they are spending so much money. I mean, if you've got Caliente making over 800 million euros of at least last year of gross win, or probably even net revenue, and they in Europe, you're probably looking at between 20 and 25% of your revenues as marketing spend. I think in Mexico, they're spending above 50%. So you're suddenly going to a market where the biggest operator is potentially spending $500 million, marketing. How do you, the market size isn't big enough for you to really want to compete at that level. So I think that makes it tough for any new entrants.
I mean, it
And that's
sounds
be
very like the US.
yeah, and but that's also before you then have at some point you have a backlash, because if you're just doing marketing spend and doing it all through the day on all kind of different media channels, at some point someone go, this is too much, and then you start having a crackdown on marketing. Mexico's good for some of the bigger operators in there, but I think it's very tough for people to come in. This idea of, let's just go, and we talk about them a lot, but I saw something about DraftKings saying international expansion is a sort of kind of when, not if. And a lot of people may assume that Mexico is, an obvious one, on the border. I mean, that would be tough. That is a lot of money. If you look at what their EBITDA is at the moment, that is a lot of money, them to try and really compete there. So I don't think that's something that's hugely attractive for operators looking to, especially for a large operator who's actually looking to make a material difference to their revenues. If you're a small operator, going in there and getting a few million more, 20, 30 million in revenue, that's fine. But what's 20, 30 million in revenue do to a FanDuel or DraftKings? It's nothing, especially when you've got the costs associated with it. So I wouldn't say Mexico is one you go into. Obviously, we've talked about Brazil at length. Next one, Argentina. And again, speaking to a couple of operators there, the view is it's become a lot more, a better market now. The inflation's kind of come down a bit, and it's the currency stabilized, you can get money out of the country. However, on the flip side, there are very few provinces you'll be in. And I think an interesting way it was put to me was, look, you have other different provinces and it'll always stay regulated on a provincial basis. And they are happy with that. They are not trying to say, there should be federal licensing. But you have, what's generally accepted is licensing conditions in Buenos Aires, the city or the province, both that you can work with. That's got the most operators because it's the biggest market, and people have said we are willing to get licensed there. These are conditions that are not too onerous for us to get a license. But if you start going to a smaller province where there's a very small market size, and they want different licensing conditions, and you have to go through that whole process for a very small pie, the operators are just not going to do that. If, however, this another province, and I believe, I could be wrong here, I believe Mendoza's done this, where they've effectively copied Buenos Aires, then they said, look, if you're saying that we are proving we can be licensed in Buenos Aires, we'll have the same conditions and then just get a license with you. Charge whatever tax rate you want. You keep all the tax revenue. It's up to you how you do it. But as long as all the technical issues and all the rest of the regulation are the same, then we will happily get a license in your province. If these smaller provinces start trying to make their own regulation and change it, then it's just going to be a dot-com market there. No one's going to bother getting a license in all of these smaller provinces. So I think that's an interesting one that should try and be communicated probably to some of the other regulators there, probably through the lotteries, that they need to just have some a homogenous licensing and the regulations around it. And then go, look, do it yourself,
Or
but
some kind of like passporting system,
yeah.
like you could even kind of include like local elements, like maybe kind of like advertising regulation is handled by the individual provinces, but ultimately have a licensing system that accepts it. If you're licensed here, as long as the standards kind of match or exceed the other, one exceeds the other, then you can, kind of move in. I mean, in terms of that market size, because I mean, like it's interesting you bring up Argentina because generally it is kind of disregarded because it's kind of fragmented. For like in Europe, there's kind of echoes of like the German market and the kind of chaos that we had there before we finally got a kind of like a system that's hopefully starting to work. And there's obviously a lot of good people kind of like pushing for further change to really kind of make it work.
A system that's starting to work, is it? Okay.
I think, well, I think there's kind of, I do feel there is kind of broadly, at least among the industry, recognition of the issues and kind of a clear and concerted voice to push for change. But with Argentina, it's been disregarded along the same ways. It's kind of like it's broken down. It's not like the individual provinces have the same, aside from Buenos Aires, have the same kind of return as like a US state. So I mean, in terms of sizing, I mean, like, how are you kind of looking at that? Are you looking at that in terms of, like individual provinces, or are you looking at that from the perspective of Buenos Aires, then the rest in terms of, like revenue projections?
Yes, it's difficult to get a lot of data from the individual provinces. It's something we're working with some of the lotteries, trying to reach out to them because a lot of them have kind of the same licensing. And so we at the moment our data is on a nationwide basis. But yeah, if we're looking at it as we're getting provincial breakdown, I think so you look at it as Buenos Aires and then the rest. And then over time you start looking at it and trying to say, right, which are the ones that actually you can get some data for, but also which are the ones that people are going to look at. And say it's not just on size. I think you have to look at its attractiveness, which is more than that. And so, as you say, if you have some kind of passporting and you say, look, Mendoza's going to have the same regulation, you'd expect most of the operators in Buenos Aires to get a license there. And then it becomes more attractive. But I think it will be piecemeal. But actually, if you have a few provinces doing it and saying that, this is a smaller province in terms of population, but they've got a lot more people licensed than us, why is that? Oh, okay, because they've made the regulations, similar or the same. It's in Buenos Aires or is in another province where people are regulated. And, they can charge their own tax, as you say, they can do stuff around the edges, their own advertising rules, etc. And they go, well, why wouldn't we do that? Because that's a way to get people on shore. And that's effectively what everyone wants. Everyone wants, if there's going to be gambling, okay, they want it on shore. So I do think there's the potential there. But, sitting on the outside and saying this makes logical sense and then actually what happens in a country are two very different things.
Moving from one slightly inhospitable market to another, I just want to finish up talking a bit about France. I mean, I am aware that this is a bit what we did on our summer holidays, but I think they're quite kind of interesting places to talk about because France is like France regulated around the time I started in the industry, I think. It was definitely in that kind of, like early 2010s, whatever it was. And very limited market, which is unusual in Western Europe. Very high tax rate, which now is the norm in Western Europe, but at that time was unusual. A lot of, it was one of these ones that kind of started out, everyone very interested in it, became very difficult, definitely got deprioritised by a lot of companies. But despite that, the market continues to do relatively well. I mean, I think I'm just going to try and seamlessly check some stats. But I think online gambling was up about for revenue about kind of 12% last year. And it continues to grow despite the difficult operating conditions, despite people pulling out. It keeps performing. Obviously, it had a few kind of difficult years, but it feels like it's an interesting situation in that despite the kind of high tax rate, despite, you know, kind of pretty onerous conditions on the operators, and, you know, even the fact that when ANJ saw, you know, kind of like a big increase in, you know, kind of gambling activity, it kind of said this needs to be done sustainably. It started monitoring advertising more closely. It started kind of approving advertising kind of strategies. And that hasn't really kind of like checked this momentum that France is developing. And then obviously the big thing, once again, you know, kind of illegal gambling kind of floats onto the horizon. France didn't have iCasino. And that's obviously a huge miss. You know, there is, you know, by all accounts, it's a fairly large, you know, kind of offshore iCasino market. There is an interesting kind of push-pull between different kind of groups. You know, for example, the kind of like the seaside casinos, you know, on the Riviera, they, you know, want, the companies behind them want to be involved in the online gambling market. FDJ, I mean, this, I don't think I've seen any kind of change in this, even despite the acquisition of Kindred and it becoming FDJ United. Stefan Pally, for a piece for IGB sister publication, Global Gaming Business. This is available on ggbmagazine.com. Stefan Pally said that, you know, was kind of not vehemently against iCasino, but, you know, wasn't broadly in favour of it. You know, so you've got kind of groups that you would, you know, the people that are supporters are not necessarily the people you'd expect. So what do you think about the prospects for iCasino in France?
I think that FDJ has got a very hedged position now. Mm-hmm. You know, on one side, they probably don't want it because, let's be honest, there's a risk, you know, potentially they may view a risk. I'm not saying there is or isn't a risk of it. The data can show kind of whatever you want, really. But, you know, they may say that it competes with their, you know, online lottery product, particularly the instance, you know, online instance versus slots. How much of a difference is there? There is a difference, but, you know, around the edges, there probably would be some cannibalization. And then also, if it just generally makes it a more attractive market and you have more competition. Did you say it's growing, but it's growing with a very small number of operators? You know, France has managed to protect its monopolies. They've opened the market, you know, at least according to what they had to do with the EU legislation. You know, FDJ, the MU, are two of the biggest players in the market. And that's, from my view, that's kind of what they wanted to happen. So from their point of view, it's been successful. And this is what annoys me when I hear people in the industry say, oh, look at France, it's been terrible market. I was like, well, not really. It depends what how you're doing in terms of potential market size. Yeah. In terms of the size of the offshore iCasino market. Yeah. In terms of what they wanted to achieve, to regulate it in as little way as possible and keep the local operators being the ones who get the money and not the Gibraltar based London listed operators, they've been highly successful in that.
Yeah, no, I think that's
fair. On the
flip
side, if they did regulate iCasino, then with FDJ's presence and with the Kindred acquisition, they are probably in prime position to benefit. So from their point of view, they're well hedged regardless of what happens.
I would also add BetClick. You know, it's, I think, you know, obviously it kind of exploded onto the scene in the early 2010s, made a lot of kind of acquisitions, built up this business, you know, sponsored a whole lot of football teams. I'm pretty sure Everest Poker was in PSG shirts. I'm sure it was in Lyon at one point. And then, you know, expanded quite rapidly and then seemed to kind of, you know, kind of stall. And then the business kind of retrenched. Obviously, Nicolas Barrault, you know, is, you know, kind of like took charge. You know, he'd step back, you know, reassumed the CEO seat. And it feels like it's been growing in this trajectory. And then obviously it was, you know, kind of acquired in one of the very limited European SPACs in this kind of roll-up with Banijay, which is, well, I mean, basically most of the kind of, if you think of a TV programme, one of their studios or one of their production companies probably had a part in this. And I think, and it was just the other day, it was when I was in France, partly, it was Stefan Kirby had made some comments on iCasino regulation and also kind of hinted at, you know, kind of potential M&A, including, you know, for the gaming business. And, you know, it's like BetClick is, it's in a few different European markets. I think it's kind of looking at Africa. I think it's definitely in a few. And I mean, I wouldn't rule them out as a competitor, especially just to wrap up before we hit 30 minutes of, kind of using that as a foothold for, Francophone Africa. That market is something that we've kind of like discussed doing, and I think, now we're duty bound to do it in the next episode. But that sort of business with that, kind of like connection to France and the localization skills could be, a decent springboard into that region.
Yeah, and that is a very, very smooth transition to what we'll probably talk about now next week, Africa, or whether that's now forced us to do it. We are actually doing a series of reports on Africa about Optum regulation. Look, BetClick's done very well in France. And yes, for Francophone Africa, it would be a good springboard, and we'll talk about this more next week. The problem is that the regulation in Francophone Africa is very much based on monopoly partnerships with PMU. To be honest, and a lot of them run by the lottery. I'm not to say corruption, but distrust from players about the lotteries
Yeah,
and
but
payment.
equally.
And it's the more Anglophone stuff where it's actually the regulation that it makes you that is kind of workable, despite the withholding taxes we'll get onto. So it is a good springboard, but unfortunately, the markets where they're perhaps better poised are the ones that are actually less or more hostile, I suppose.
But equally, BetClick, as it's shown in France, has proved that it can compete in a monopoly-dominated market.
Yes, just not in a market where there is only a monopoly. But we'll look at the different ones in Africa next week because we have gone over 30 minutes, so you're going to have to do some editing. And it's been quite, again, quite a random mix from US sweepstakes to Argentinian provinces to French regulation to Africa.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a
So I don't
world
know how you're
tour.
going to describe it as what we're talking about because you know how some podcasts are really well structured and they go, this week we're talking about Mexico.
Oh yeah, this is more in the kind of this is more in the jazz side of podcasts. I mean, it's free form. We see where it goes. We see where the music takes us. So we've ended up on Africa. We will be discussing that next week. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. This has been episode 4, I think, of Right to the Source with Robin Harrison and Ed Birkin. See you next week.